I'm freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
What have we here?
Go fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies, gentlemen, NBs, this is the ESE Podcast, your weekly AEW review and breakdown. This is Eat Sleep Elite. What is going on, everybody? I am Bane Duke, also known as the Duke of Herbs, here with my good buddy Charlie, a.k.a. the motherfucking Lisan El Gaib. I don't care. You can have that title.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go.
Because you know what I am? I am Desmond Hart. I am a Giga Chad that Wardlow fears in his waking dreams. I am the fire starter. Anyway.
Again!
Yes. So we're back again with more ESE. It was a good week this week. A lot of really good stuff. There was... I would say, and we talked about this before the show, Collision was, it was a taped Collision. There was some good stuff to start it off. I mean, one of the best matches of the week, if not the best, you know what I mean?
Like, great first quarter of the show, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and it started off strong, like, but that's probably the point I would make, it started off really strong, but it is a taped Collision, you know, they probably knew going in, okay, this is going to be fine, but it's not like, you know, we'll save it for Daily's Place next week when we're live again, you know? So, I expect that Collision will probably slap pretty hard. There was still some good stuff on there, but it was just, you know, it could have been better. But Dynamite really did actually think deliver this week in a lot of ways. So we'll definitely get into that. And we're probably going to get to it in just a few seconds. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of fun stuff across the breadth of both shows. But I would say that most of my favorite segments were on Dynamite this week, I would say. But for the example... there is going to be one that we talk about is on Collision, but I do think it's probably the only segment from Collision that I maybe would have taken. So that being said, though, I guess, yeah, Charlie, I mean, you know, before we get started here, I want to let everybody know something. We just recorded our predictions for the nominations for Oscars this year. If you're interested in film or TV at all, check that out. It's a pretty cool little, it's a long video, or I guess I should say long audio, right? But we got through every category that we thought deserved our attention. And so
I can leave a link in the description, ESE Fantasy.
So. Absolutely. So link that. It's on the other feed. And we also did like top 10 movies of last year, most anticipated to this year. So even if you have like a passing interest, those videos would probably work for you because you may not even need the context for understanding why it is we might, you know, have picked something we could pretty well might explain it in the video, you know, so maybe that'll find a passing interest for you. And if you're just like someone that only their only entertainment is wrestling, like you don't really watch other media, or if you do, it's like wrestling adjacent or something like that, and there are people out there that are like that where wrestling is their one obsession, maybe it's a good way to broaden your horizons a little bit. You know, you never know, there could be a wrestling movie that ends up there. What we talk about, you best believe when they come out we're gonna see them. So, you know, if they seem good, you know. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, check out those that content. I just wanted to just signal boost our other content really quickly because we've been working really hard on it. And I just wanted to, you know, I mean, I do imagine there are some people that listen to this show, Charlie, that also are interested in film and TV. Yeah. So, you know, it's not a bad idea every now and then to just let them know what we're doing. But yeah, I guess with that being said, Charlie, we'll jump into favorites. And this week, I believe you had the nod. So
yes, I do.
Take us away, buddy.
Yeah, so... overall, I was pretty excited going into the week, and I think that we had some pretty big matches deliver that needed to deliver. So we're going to jump over to AEW Collision this week, where we had the Texas Death Match between Hangman Adam Page and Christopher Daniels. Hangman ends up winning this match. This was disgusting. He took the old man out to pasture. He beat the living fuck out of him.
This is old Yeller in the ring.
Yeah, and it was as one-sided as it probably ever could have been, and yet it still worked. It was beautiful. This was the Texas Death Match has become Hangman's thing, and it has been for, you know, a few months now. Well, I guess a couple years now. Time's gone on, right? And every time he does it, it's an exciting matchup. So, you know, we get Christopher Daniels out there. He walks out. He's the fallen angel. And the vice principal.
How the hell did
a
Virginian school teacher end up the king of Texas death matches? That's what a wild
beyond
journey.
Me, right? This was just, it was so bloody. It was violent. Christopher Daniels at one point hit a Uranagi off the ropes into the barbed wire table. That was just unreal. The crowd was here for the fallen angel. This reminded me of why, you know, SCU was one of the first groups you know, one of the first signings to AEW, and why we were so excited about that, just being, you know, SCU. It almost brought it back, because it's just like,
this looked like Ring of Honor CD to an extent, hitting like best moonsault ever's onto like people with tables draped over them. Oh my god, we didn't even talk about the fucking throwback gear and music, dude. That was so vibey.
Yeah, it was
great.
He brought back the Fallen Angel stuff. It was awesome. It was really, really well done, and I just thought Hangman Page pretty much left him out there to die, and they never said anything about it on commentary, but pretty much the talk of the town is, and how the match ended with the way it did, this was his retirement match, and if it ends up being the last match he did, you know, good on him. And I can fully tell you this, a couple weeks ago I wasn't feeling the angle. I was like, are we really doing this with Hangman Page? And I'm glad it didn't go on, you know, an extra 3-4 weeks to go to Grand Slam Australia, which is what I originally thought was going to happen. But instead they turned it into this TV angle. Hangman Adam Page comes off even more violent and vicious than he did before. I don't know. I thought this worked very, very well for me. And yeah, it kind of just set the, it unfortunately peaked the actual show of Collision for me.
Yeah, it was all downhill.
It totally
from here.
Peaked the show. Like we get the Tony Storm thing after, and I was into that, but the rest of the show just, you know, it was kind of whatever. But no, I mean, they knocked it out of the park with this one. It's nice to see Hangman, because he gets a lot of those big pay-per-view spots where he's allowed to shine, but it's nice to see him get, you know, show one off on television here. It was brilliant, and yeah, I can't say enough good words about Christopher Daniels. So if this was his last match, fucking awesome. He went out, you know, putting the other guy over. So yeah, I really dug it. What'd you think of this one? And
Yeah, dude, the way this angle's played out is so much better than it would have initially looked on paper. But I just knew somewhere in the back of my mind that it just, I felt this energy coming, that it felt like this was going to be the send off for Christopher Daniels. It may not end up being, right? He may still have some sort of role or something like that, but at least as a wrestler, you know what I mean? And, you know, it's funny, like we mentioned, like it seems like Hangman Page's big spots last year were mostly on pay-per-view. At least we didn't end up picking him for favorites a lot of the weeks that he was wrestling on TV. And that could just be our own, you know, it's tough when you're wrestling on the same shows as Will Ospreay and fucking, you know, Ricochet and Kinosuke Takeshita. You're going to just have rough weeks where you just get beat by those guys. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I do think there was, I mean, I can think of 4 or 5 Hangman Page matches on pay-per-view last year that were just phenomenal. You know what I mean? Like, so probably less than that, but I can't exactly remember how many times he was on the pay-per-views off the top of my head, but it sounds right. You know what I mean? I think he was on 4 or 5 of them and had big main angles going into them.
He succeeded in every role they gave him to.
Correct. And so it's like, just unfortunate. He just ended up in our favorites a lot last year. It's, you know, he's going to this year. He's already in one. So, you know, expect that to repeat if they keep putting him on television, right? But and they put him in weeks like this where he's got a better chance, you know? So, this played out, like I said, so much better than I would have imagined. We had the King of the Indies gimmick stuff for CD, which I love. It battled a little bit to the outside. Then there was some barbed wire that was grabbed by Hangman from under the page. It seems like he was testing the chairs or something. Maybe he was looking for 2 specific ones to do that spot later with. I'm not sure. Or if he just wanted to make sure they weren't like gimmick chairs so they didn't kill CD by accident. I'm not sure. But maybe it was just fucking trying to look menacing by just slapping the chairs together. Because one time he did it and the crowd started clapping and he was like, oops, I didn't mean to do that. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, wrapped some barbed wire across. Raked. That is the right word. He raked him with the barbed wire and then wrapped it around his mouth. That powerbomb in the chair spot was pretty wild. My brain kind of did like a bit of a deletion of what happened in between here because I'm not entirely sure. But at one point, they got up and there was a barbed wire table set up in the ring and they were threatening a suplex over. And then that's when that Uranagi spot comes in.
Yeah, so good.
And
it was perfect for the momentum of the match.
It's speaking of perfect things for moments within the match. So after that best moonsault ever with the barbed wire table on top of Hangman, which just looked insane. Hangman does this like rage version of like the dead man wake up, which looked fucking metal, you know, when he just fucking shot up and looked angry as hell, you know.
Oh, and it was so good.
At that point, CD knows it's over. We all know it's over. He gets fucking tombstone piledrivered on a chair. He gets dead eyed on a chair. And then after the match, when he looks like he's dead, he gets his own finisher on him. Good night, Christopher Daniels. The fallen angel has fallen, Charlie. I believe this will probably be the last time we see Christopher Daniels in the ring. Great match. Phenomenal opening collision.
Yeah, I do agree. I think it's going to be the last time. Hell of a way to go out. So.
Yep. I guess that'll take us. We're riding back in time. We're H.G. Wells here, Time Machine, and we're backing up. So we're opening up with the Dynamite Maximum Carnage, and we're jumping into the middle of the show. And this is a bit of a rarity, it feels like, nowadays. You know, it used to happen. It felt like every couple of months on the first year of this podcast. And now it happens like twice or three times a year. And this may be a more of an indication of what should probably be promo of the year, when we actually disregard every in-ring match to put a promo in our favorites. I think it's something we should consider. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this time, it didn't make it last week. It honestly maybe should have more than it did this week. And that's not to say that this was lesser. I actually think this did, you know, go places and increase things. But I think last week's was just so good that it maybe deserved it more. But there was just so much good wrestling last week. It was kind of tough. You know what I mean? So that being said, though, Jeff Jarrett arrives to the ring, you know, to address the stuff that happened last week after he declined MJF. And just like last week, he barely lets him get a word in before he steps out. He says, you know, because Jeff used the word humble, right? He was like, I'm just too humble to do that way, whatever. And MJF's like basically trying to call Jarrett on all his bullshit here, right? And like, basically, MJF feels disrespected by, you know, I'm trying to like get to the core of this. At the beginning of this, it's MJF comes out feeling disrespected that he got turned down last week, right?
Yeah.
And then you got Jarrett calling him out, saying that, you know, MJF wants somebody else to ride the coattails of to be able to be successful, right? Because the whole plan he had laid out last week was, you know, I'll help you to win the title, and then as soon as you are champion, you give me the first crack, right? Obviously, MJF intentionally ended up betraying him and take the title from him after injuring him or something, right? So theoretically or something, right? So,
scumbag.
Basically, he's saying, you're a coward. You won't go in and face the casino gauntlet yourself. You want someone else to go in and win it for you and then win the title so you don't actually have to earn a title shot, you know? And at this point, MJF screams at Jeff Jarrett to never interrupt him again. Was that too much? I don't know. Like, because here's the thing, right? Because did this disrupt the flow of the promo a little bit? Probably not. I'm sure Jeff's talented enough to be able to just pivot, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's just, this felt a little bit off to me when he screamed. Maybe that was just a bit overcooked. Like, he just maybe he should have waited a little bit longer or something. I'm not sure. But either way, MJF chills out a little bit. Basically, he's saying that Jarrett's convinced the crowd that he's, you know, that he's one of them. But, like, literally, I don't know. Like, here's the thing. Like, I'm fine with MJF just insulting the crowd as, like, a bailout when he doesn't actually have a direction he wants to go in. It almost feels like he's, like, setting it up in his head. He's like, well, okay, I'm going to try and find something. So, in the meantime, I'm going to insult the crowd so I have time to think. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a criticism. I just feel like I'm noticing it more, you know? I think it's because we've seen so many MJF promos. You know what I mean? But let's get into the zingers here. So MJF says the last outlaw is the last thing you see before your favorite wrestling company dies. Called him pro wrestling Grim Reaper.
Fucking brilliant.
And said he's thinking of his career makes him want to drink, you know. Sorry, you're raging. Oh, I mean, recovering alcoholic. You know, yeah. So he's going to send Jarrett Sats passing back to rehab where he belongs. Oh, but he told him to make sure that his sexy MILF of a wife sticks around, because he's a fan of Karen. And when he's done with her, he'll slip her back to Nashville, so Jarrett knows what generational talent and Olympic gold medalist balls taste like. And then Jarrett responds by saying MJF just makes cruel insults and knows that his best years are behind him.
I love this turning point.
Yes. But entering the Owen Hart cart, or the Owen Hart Cup. Sorry, my brain just did a little bit of a flip there. And so last year made him realize he wanted to keep going. Said it's exactly what he needs to get back on track to become AEW World Champion. MJF thinks that he can hurt Jarrett, but he did everything like this before. and before MJF and better than him, which I love that line. I love the way you flipped that line back on him. How many people have ever done that to MJF? People have said that
not
line back
many.
To MJF.
Yeah.
But they've never said it in a way that felt like he fucking actually owned him with it.
The Butcher had a really good one that was similar, but it was always a play on, you know, I'm best in the world.
So. Correct, yes. So that's fair. Yeah. The Butcher is probably the only real... The Butcher and then maybe a couple of other people are really the only people that have really truly ever stood toe-to-toe on the mic with MJF. Swerve is one of them, I would say. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'd still argue they're like... it's either 18 or 28 minute fucking promo battle.
Oh, it's the best promo segment in AEW's history by a mile. It
was so good, and AEW did the smart thing of uploading it full on
the
YouTube.
Full thing.
Right
I still
away.
Watch that thing every now and then.
Yes,
you know?
It was perfect.
It's so good. It's perfect, and it fucking feels like almost evergreen because they're just talking to each other. They're not talking about some pay-per-view. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're talking about just wrestling in general. You know what I mean? And the history of it. And to be
real, it is always funny that AEW has kind of slipped away from being, you know, the promo company when that was what separated them for a little bit was how great they were and how authentic they were at that.
Yeah.
And now it feels like when we get these kind of MJF and Jeff Jarrett promos and how great it was, mm-hmm. it really sticks out. And we've had a couple weeks now, even Hangman's last week, like we talked about, like how great that was. So maybe we're trying to find our footing again with this.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Yeah, and so this is, like you said, I like the turn here because Jarrett then kind of does not just say, oh, I'm better than you at fucking being an asshole. He's like, I'm going to prove it right now by fucking doing it to you. And he's like, man, it must be fucking tough. Oh, sorry. You know, first he asked him if he's just a dumbass or a scumbag because, or all of the above, because it must be tough to be raised by a call girl mother and know for a fact when his father knocked his mother up, she still made him pay for it.
That's fucking brutal.
That's fucking savage. Jared said, the old saying is, we're married to our mommies. MJF is nothing but a Canadian, MJF is nothing but a Canadian call girl. Oh, yeah, sorry. I think he was saying MJF's girl is nothing but a Canadian call girl. While MJF was burning it up for 60 minutes with Will Ospreay, his old lady was doing the same thing with a bunch of wrestlers in the back. Jesus Christ, Jeff. And then Jared said, MJF's drowning in his own shit in a title prick, a scared little boy, and he went into the gauntlet, scared of becoming another one-hit wonder. MJF said he didn't need his daddy to make him a top guy or start his own company to be a top guy. MJF made MJF. We know what happens when Jared's the king of the mountain. While MJF is the best in the world, and then he just got screwed. His name, reputation, legacy dragged through the mud, doesn't want to win the world title. He needs to win it. Shove it down all the detractors' throats. And now he has to wait in line for Jeff freaking Jarrett? No way. And with all due respect, no wrestling fans ever give it a shit about Jarrett. What pisses MJF off is just because Jarrett was best friends with Owen Hart, he's owed a grand finale? And this is the point where it kind of, you know, this is gonna where it's going to turn into a brawl. Because
now
it's
hitting, it's already been good.
Yes.
And now we're hitting an emotional level that I don't think other people were realizing this feud was going to get to.
Yes, but, and I also think there's a little bit element of truth in this. I do think, obviously, Jeff Jarrett does have a fucking real relationship with Owen Hart, and he has those feelings. But I do think that his character was trying to use that to maybe get another opportunity. You know what I mean? And you can say that maybe that's maybe not the best thing to do with your deceased friend's memory. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, even if you had permission, you know, maybe it still looks a little like, you know. Anyway, then he finally punches him. And as we know, Jeff Jarrett throws great punches. Then the security gets brought in.
Oh, so good.
Karen Jarrett came out and tried to calm down Jeff. MJF grabbed her, threw her to Jeff before bailing out. This was super long, but it was good. This is probably the longest promo segment we've got in a while, and that's why I ended up picking it, because there was just so much great content in here. And just, you know, you were commenting along with throughout, Charlie, because it was obviously a long segment there. But was there anything else you just wanted to add? I mean, I really enjoyed this. Like, I was like, I was literally playing, I don't think it was Marvel Rivals, but I was playing something on my Xbox at the same time. And I had like turned it off to, you know, or I'd paused it or whatever to watch the opening match or whatever. And then I kind of like was like, okay, I'm just going to like half watch the background, the promo segments in between or whatever. And then we get to this segment and I see Jeff Jarrett come out and I'm like, pause, because I have to pay attention to this because I know it's about to be good. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, it really worked. And I got to tell you, I'm looking more forward now to what they do next week. And I think that's important because I just a couple weeks ago, the vibes were a little down and we started all these new programs. And on paper, if we're just being honest, none of them are the sexiest thing you've ever seen.
We discussed this because I could see this is probably going to pay-per-view. And I was like, you think this is going to pay-per-view? You were like, oh, I hope not. And I was like, oh, really? Because I think that's the plan in my head. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it very well might. I mean, because MJF is, as we've called it, one of the only real prize fighters around here. I mean, he really only wrestles on pay-per-view. And when he doesn't, it's a big deal, and they make it a big deal. He lives the prize fighter gimmick.
That might be the argument that you do this on TV is that reason, you know, because it's such a big deal.
Grand Slam Australia, maybe. But yeah, no, it was very good, well-deserving of a favorite moment of the week. And yeah, I guess we get into our next part of the show here where we do have a little bit of news. Some of it's a little bit rumor-based, but it's rumors that have a little bit of meat to the bone. So it's not just like we're reporting, you know, everyone in the back hates, I don't know, so-and-so. Everyone in the back hates Kenny Omega. No. We're not,
I hate Kenny. He's not as good as Brian Danielson.
God damn it. See? There you go. I did notice Adam Cole wasn't on Raw this week.
That's pretty crazy. Adam Cole not being on Raw. It's the nuts.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for that. Okay. Well, we've mentioned Grand Slam Australia a couple times, so I guess let's open with this. The AEW's come out with their broadcast plans for this show. So, nobody bothered to check when they were planning on airing this thing. There's a lot of rumors going on about this show of AEW can't really promote it because it's not going to be showing on Max. That's one of the things that people kept saying. AEW can't really promote it because it goes against their new deal. So, this, that, and the other. They've already moved the event, I think, once, maybe twice. Now they've come out, and we finally have an idea of when it's broadcasting. So, they displayed a graphic that it would be 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, February 15th. That was last week, a week ago. It is actually going to be airing on tape delay in place of Collision that week. NBA All-Star Weekend is that night. There's a chance now that Grand Slam Australia isn't airing till like midnight Eastern time, so 9 p.m. Pacific. No one really knows what's going on with this. It's all a clusterfuck. I gotta tell you, Duke, I thought this was a pay-per-view. I did not realize until this week it's a television episode.
You didn't know that? Oh, yeah, no. Grand Slam has never been used for a pay-per-view
before.
That's
the thing. I thought it was going to be used for a pay-per-view because they put it on a Saturday. So I never for once thought the plan was we're airing this on TNT. And so when you hear that, I'm like, oh, that's still pretty cool. You know, that's pretty neat. Wait a minute. Let's do the chime check. Oh, that would be at 2:30 in the morning. Oh, God. Oh, that night there's NBA All-Star Weekend? I don't know what the hell's happening here. It's a big AEW show that I'm probably not going to watch the day it comes out because I'm not going to sit there and guess what time it comes out that night. It just seems like a clusterfuck. I have noticed they haven't been promoting it as much. It is a little... See, I didn't think of that until someone mentioned it. But then once they mentioned it, I'm like, all the promotion material has been to Revolution. They really are just skipping right by this. I don't know. I don't really care. It is what it is. If it's replacing Collision, does anyone fucking care? I mean, I don't even know, man.
So we're going to have Dynamite on Wednesday and then Grand Slam on Saturday? That's how that's going to work?
Apparently. That's why I thought this was a pay-per-view. This is so
weird.
Interesting.
It's interesting. I'm guessing
Dynamite
will
be on February 12th.
I'm guessing it's exactly what they said. I'm thinking Max didn't know about this show, and then they were like, how does this fit into our new model? We kind of, because we haven't heard any more of these being announced, but outside of your Winter Is Coming, which has got corporate synergy, you might not get as many of these TV events. You know what I mean? Like,
and the big thing was when they mentioned this, the vibe was that people thought it was going to switch to pay-per-view because they're taking it out of because the date wasn't a Dynamite date. And so that was why it was like, oh, they're going to make this a pay-per-view. Remember, they were going to run this big stadium. They couldn't sell the stadium.
Yeah.
So they switched it to an arena thing that is pretty big still. And now it's on a Saturday, but now it's replacing television on a tape delay. I don't know. Look, we're still waiting to see what the card is. I'm excited for Mariah May versus Toni Storm. That's a great first match. I don't know. I guess we'll keep people updated on this. It is
a very bad sign. This is a huge fumbling by AEW.
This is a big fumble. I mean, yeah, this is a big fumble. So I hope it gets organized, and I hope the people at the show have a great time. Because if you're one of our listeners and you're attending that show, I feel like you're probably really fucking excited. So
they're playing Australian rules football with this now, just kicking the ball around, you know?
I hope for your sake, AEW doesn't, you know, I think no matter what, for the live crowd, it's going to be a banger. It's just who's not watching live, right? Like, do we see this almost a day
later? It's going to be the lowest viewed episode of
I believe we technically ever. Would see it a day later. So it'd be 2:30 a.m. Eastern time on Saturday. So we're going to be seeing this almost 24 hours later.
Yeah, I don't know. We're just going to have to plan out that Sunday it's to weird. Just watch it that
it's
night.
Weird.
That's what we're going to have to do, regardless of whether I work or not, because like, that's just the only way we're going to be able to watch that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because I'm not going to fucking find the time. I mean, I could, but I just, you know, that, and then I'm also having to watch the Dynamite, which I, you know, it's like, do you even, I don't know. We'll figure it out. But
it's weird, right? I don't
it's
even
weird.
Know.
I don't like
it's
it. It's see, not AEW.
Once you start
like,
cracking
you know?
This egg open, it gets our brains like, wait a minute. Why are they doing this? Whatever. But if you're going to the show, I think you're going to have a fucking great time. We got a couple cool things here. So last week we were talking about the reports of Malakai kind of being gone. What's next for Buddy? What's next for Brody? We kind of both agree no matter what, Brody should be sticking with Julia. Unsure about what's happening with Buddy. It sounds like Buddy will be sticking around with him, and they have both filed trademarks. See, now, I wonder if people don't like when they hear trademark stuff, but I guess it's not really a spoiler. Is anything in wrestling a spoiler? That's a whole other thing. Anyways, Brody filed a trademark for Hounds of Hell, and then 2 days later, Buddy filed a trademark for Hellhounds. So it sounds like they will be sticking together. It's as at least will be those three plus Sky, so maybe four: Buddy, Brody, Sky, and Julia. I would imagine. So, yeah.
I mean, if you're mad that they trademarked it and it got leaked, I mean, like it's then they need to do a better job of like. I mean, the problem is it's fucking publicly available information. So whenever someone goes and files a trademark,
I got to imagine too. If you're listening to our show, you really don't care.
No, probably not.
The idea of if Buddy and those guys show up named with Hellhounds merch, you're not going to get upset. I got to imagine you don't really care.
I don't think you do.
Okay, and then this is the big rumor we have to talk about. It has to do with Britt Baker. So Britt Baker's been gone for a little bit. Last time she was here, she did that. They seemingly were setting up an angle with her and Professor Serena Deeb. Sienna?
It's Serena.
I got Sienna on the mind from Terrifier, I guess. I guess that's always a good thing. Serena Deeb, and she said, nobody cares. And on the show, I was covering Dynamite at the time, and I was really annoyed. I was like, you don't just bury your person's gimmick that bad. I was like, I just wasn't a big fan of it.
Clearly, Serena must have not been either, because the angle didn't go forward. You know what I mean?
Which, that was November 13th. 2 months. Rumors have come out that she is, again, we're clarifying here, these are rumors, that she is wildly unpopular in the AEW women's locker room, and that Tony Khan may no longer be booking her because he is, quote, fed up with her. Alvarez then countered that, saying these have been blown out of proportion, this, that, and the other. There doesn't appear to be any imminent plans, but there's nothing for her being finished within the company, which I would agree with. I don't think they're just going to be done with Britt Baker. But I got to imagine the fact that we didn't get any follow-up from that, and this, that, and the other. There's so many things you want to point to. You know, and the other thing was Britt Baker was liking posts from people, which it is what it is. I think Britt Baker was fantastic in her role with the company when it came to – she really was the pillar for the women's division. For those first couple years of the company, she was the prospect, right? Under 100 matches signed to AEW, becomes the face of the women's division. And I think just maybe the booking, maybe everything else, there were some injuries in there. I think just it passed her by. And I think
what it was is she got injured at the worst times that she could have been injured for her career, because she was probably the most when Jamie and like Saraya and fucking just name like three or four wrestlers. Yeah. You know, Ruby Soho.
Britt is incredible on the mic.
Kicking it off, she was just gone at the time. You know what I mean? She wasn't being used. And then there was that long period where I don't think she, you know, even had announced an injury, and she was just gone. We were like, I wonder where she is. You know what I mean? Like,
Right now.
Yeah. And like, so, you know, like, and so it's tough because when you're not there, it does actually matter. Like everybody else has had so much more screen time than her in the last few years that it's like, she's kind of forgotten would not be the right term, but it's like,
that's why I said that. I think the division just kind of passed her by a little bit. It's a different division now. 2024 was the revolution of the women's division in AEW. Once they brought in Toni Storm in 2023, right? Once they brought her in, she is now, Toni Storm is the ace. She's on her.
Yeah, she's fully replaced Britt as the main woman.
She's on her fourth
woman.
Character, her third or fourth character. Every single one of them's gotten over. She's probably going to win the title again under a different character. She is the ace. And you've added Mercedes. You've added Deonna. You've grown stars like Julia, like Sky, Queen Aminata, Anna Jay is becoming a bigger star. There's so many I'm not naming, but
Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale. I mean,
it's a different division now. And now you've just brought in another excursion, right? We haven't even seen Camille since the breakup.
It's the biggest indictment I can give you about what this has done to Britt Baker's career, her not being on TV. And I know part of that is not her fault and so on and so forth. But the fact that she's not been there is that now someone like Harley Cameron, who is the lower on the
totem pole. We didn't even mention Mariah May.
But somebody like Carly Cameron, who's lower on the totem pole, will get matches with the champion. And you don't see Britt wrestling Mariah right now. You know what I mean? Like,
and Harley Cameron has taken every opportunity given to her and made it work. It's just, it's a different division. And, you know, God, if the last time we saw her on television was the Nobody Cares thing, that is going to be so depressing.
It won't matter for her career, though. She'll end up, she's going to go to the Fed. She will, you know,
even
and she'll
if
do
she
well
doesn't,
there.
She's a successful dentist, so.
There's also that. She may just,
let's be real.
She doesn't give a shit about wrestling at all. And
she's incredibly smart and successful. And there's
find
a reason.
I'd find that extremely hard to believe, given how much passion she clearly has for the business. That's why I think she'll still do something in the business. Maybe she doesn't go directly to the Fed. Maybe she just does some stuff with Impact.
Well, how great she is on the mic. I mean, she probably be a world champion in 3 months. So
yeah, I mean, think about it. She could be Impact's
world
champion.
I don't think she's done with AEW. I just think she's off screen right now. That's kind of where I'm at. There's plenty for her to do here. There is plenty for her to do. So I mean, even we haven't even touched her and Mariah May, and
we don't want to force people that are not happy. The locker room not being happy with somebody in AEW is a bad thing. It can lead to some pretty not great things for the company. So I would prefer if we didn't do that, if we could avoid it, you know?
You don't need to do that. But again, just now that segment's over, that's all rumors. This might be someone spreading horse shit that doesn't need to be spread. You know, as we talked about on our Oscar show, there's kind of a bit of a smear campaign for one of the big movies right now. And it's not Emilia Perez, Jesus. This is the brutalist. But I guess the last thing we'll talk about today is United Japan Pro Wrestling incorporates again. They really outlined their future goals again. Formed in the late 2023, UJPW is an association of wrestling promotions in Japan that includes New Japan Pro Wrestling, NOAH, Stardom, All Japan, Big Japan, DDT, Dragon Gate, and more. The organization's goals are to, quote, further the presence of pro wrestling and cultural merit in Japanese society at large, allow professional wrestling to contribute further to cultural and sporting sectors, and work toward continued health and prosperity of the industry. Right? Beautiful stuff.
Yeah, you love to see it. And we were talking about this before the show started. It makes so much more sense for the Japanese wrestling companies, not to try and be like, oh, American wrestling is so much bigger, but it is. You know what I mean? It's just a statistical fact. You know what I mean?
The money WWE is making, none of these other companies can even fucking think about.
AEW can think about it, but they'll not even be close. You know what I mean? So,
5-year, one bill deal for half of the show.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. You know, so it makes sense for them to want to.
You know what
do
I noticed
well,
though? No,
you know?
Gleet mentioned. So Gleet must not be making enough yen.
Or they're making enough on their own that they didn't need to be a part of this, you know?
Well,
it's possible.
It says one of the big things is you have to be making money. And I think Gleet might just be a little too new.
It could be. I mean, it takes a couple of years for these companies to get off the ground, I feel like. I'm sure AEW wasn't
initially profitable.
Because
I know when Coda showed up in Gleet, it was a pretty big deal. And, like, Jack Cartwheel was wrestling in Gleet a lot. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I wanted to acknowledge that. They became an incorporated organization. So they have now moved fully into that. good for them. I, you know, introducing more people to professional wrestling in any part of the world is, it should be everyone's goal in wrestling.
A couple of years ago, we had like one or two pay-per-views with Kaito Kiyomiya on them. Imagine if one person from each of these promotions showed up and did something cool on one of their shows.
Yeah.
Every couple of months, you know, or every 3 or 4 months, whatever those shows happen, the big shows.
Because I mean, obviously we don't live in Japan, but I don't know how much tribalism exists there. But we see it on social media, and that's why we play fun with it on our show. Of the reality is, professional wrestling is professional wrestling. Outside of us that love the shit, everyone thinks it's a fucking joke. And the more people that realize it's not a joke and that these are real people, they are athletes, they are characters.
That's why I tell people to just be everything. Normal. Just be normal when you're interacting about wrestling, because you fucking turn the normal people off so easily. And you're like, we don't need those people anyway. We kind of do a little bit if we want this to be a successful business.
That is the first line of their statement, is introduce more people to professional wrestling. And I couldn't agree more. That is what it should all be about. And we do have a little more Japan to talk about today. They announced Tanahashi's last match in America. Windy City Riot, his final match, Konosuke Takeshita, the Aces' final match in the United States. He picked Takeshita.
That is going to be the passing of the torch, I think.
Oh my God. The man who cried after watching Omega vs. Gabe Kidd. He knows the talent that Takeshita is. This guy's the president of the company.
He just signed him to his company. He knows exactly. Signed him knowing this is going to be his ace. He knew what he was doing.
So I think no matter what now, we're locking it in. We will be watching Windy City Riot April 11th. So we got time. And the only other match we covered 2 weeks ago, Gabe Kidd versus Tomohiro Ishii. So already the card's going to be incredible. If you guys attend those shows, it's Tanahashi's final match in the States, man. Fucking enjoy it. If you're able to go, I think you can't. If you've never seen him wrestle in your life, I haven't. You haven't. We have never seen him. So, like, enjoy, guys. Seriously. I think that's a can't miss. That's it for news. We had a little bit of stuff we had to talk about, right? But some fun stuff in there, too. So, I guess let's get into the actual meat of today's show, where we do our reviews of Dynamite and Collision. This week we had Maximum Carnage. We had the World Championship on the line this week. Neither of us picked it as our favorites.
Shout out DC Comics for shooting another shot over at Marvel and saying, yeah, you want to make a comic called Maximum Carnage? Can't now, bitch. It's a wrestling show, you know?
Yeah, here we go. What do we got today?
Yeah, so we opened up with a fucking pay-per-view quality video package, which is an awesome video package, which, you know, kind of recapped some stuff from the previous weeks, you know? That was leading up to this, you know, like Hobbs and Mox, I think, had some comments in here as well. But I wrote in my notes, this was pay-per-view quality. And that is the point. This whole week was supposed to be a pay-per-view quality wrestling week. We didn't mention that at the top of the show, actually. I guess we should have. This was supposed to be essentially a pay-per-view on TV, is the way that they build this show. You know what I mean? So
yeah, and gave it the special name, gave it this, that, and the other. Yeah.
So that's pretty cool, you know? It's weird that we're going to have a show in a few weeks that's technically the opposite of this. But hey, whatever, you know? It's what it is, you know what I mean? But yeah, so after that, we opened up with the what I thought was definitely the best non-gimmicked match, I guess, if you will. One that didn't have, like, you know, Plunder or whatever in it this week. Which is Brian Cage taking on Kenny Omega in what I called the return of the century. I fully expected this to be Brian Cage's best match in his career, and I don't think I was disappointed by that.
No.
And, yeah, so, you know, we know Kenny loves to showcase people with his, like, especially people like Brian who maybe don't get the rub as much as they should. And we've given Brian Cage a lot of shit over the years, but, like, the way his look is right now, him being teamed up with Lance Archer, I think this is all pretty much working for us right now, right? I think it's all pretty good. Like, yeah, it's still Brian Cage, but, I mean, and we don't expect him to do
it. We love him in small doses.
Right, and this was a great small dose. That's why I always loved
him in Pro Wrestling Gorilla.
He kind of is a pro wrestling gorilla. Anyway, that being said.
Okay, what if he came out with the nickname the Silverback?
Oh, hold on now. I might get it. I don't know if that one gets past the censors, but I think this is a big endorsement for him. So I like that. He works super hard. He's deserving as anybody else. There was a spot where Don attacked a laid out Kenny on the desk. He had a really nice V trigger in this match. This Kenny being as good as he is, despite everything, like, it's a gift we should all be incredibly grateful for, you know, like, it's something that we didn't know was going to be a fact, you know. We've seen what other wrestlers, when they have horrifying injuries like he went through, and recoveries that you're not the same. And somehow Kenny Omega is fucking Superman and just has the fucking healing factor or whatever the fuck, you know? And I guess that's Brian Cage that has the healing factor since he's the Wolverine, but whatever, you know? Yeah. And, you know, so.
Again!
Sorry.
Someone needs to edit a gif of a bunch of infinite V triggers with fucking again. Anyway, that being said, yeah, this was a bit of a murder of Brian Cage, but ultimately Takeshita did stand tall here, which I thought was interesting. And there was some loud ass fuck Don Callis chants at one point too. So I thought it was a really great match to open the show. You know, it's not going to get like 5 stars or anything, but I thought for, you know,
I think I got 3.75. That tally is out already.
Okay, there you go. So, you know, I it was solid, a good opening to the show. Like I said, it was more, I was just saying what in my head, I was just trying to figure out what is Kenny on TV going to be like nowadays? Is it going to be less? Is it going to be more? And he's not missed a step, dude. It's kind of insane, you know?
No, brought that energy that we were hoping we'd get from Kenny and all this post-match.
Yep. Yeah, so we have Archer and Kyle Fletcher that hit the ring. They attack the midsection of Will, who also was coming out to make the save at this point, you know. Yeah, I mean, Will Ospreay confrontation with Kenny obviously has a lot of fucking sauce to it, you know what I mean? And Kenosuke Takeshita, I mean, we have got so many things. We've got Okada, we've got Takeshita, we've got, you know, Omega and fucking Ospreay. We've got Kyle Fletcher now being in the mix, you know what I mean? I mean, the amount of matches that we're going to get out of this that are just going to be insane.
Can they hold off on the tag match till Australia? Or are they going to blow it on? Or, I'm not going to say blow it. I hate when it's doing that. I meant to use it in the sense of like blow their load on it on a Dynamite. Are they going to just.
So like Kyle and Kanase versus Kenny and Will?
You can main event Australia with that. Straight up.
They're probably not going to hold it, I'll be honest, because that match just sounds so fun. It's probably going to be in the next couple of weeks, but hey, you never know.
That could rival the infamous fucking tag match that everyone points to when you basically had, you know, your dream team of Hangman and Kenny versus the Bucks.
Oh, yeah. This could rival that match. It genuinely could.
Fletcher and Takeshita have tagged before, and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Kenny and Will Ospreay in a tag match against those guys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Dude.
That could be insane. But, yeah, so in the end, Omega and Ospreay did stand tall. The way I looked at this segment was before Will and everybody got involved, it was like Kanosuke's moment, you know what I mean? So, you know, either way. We cut to a video backstage of the Hurt Syndicate ahead of the in-ring debut for MVP, which, you know, I wasn't honestly expecting we were going to see MVP wrestle a whole ton in this run, but I'm actually kind of glad that we get to see it because, you know, MVP didn't really get to do a lot in his last run in WWE, you know what I mean? So it's fun to see him actually do some
stuff. I thought that production that they did.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I think everything the Hurt Syndicate's doing in AEW right now is pretty good, honestly.
How they shot it with him at the bar, wherever they were at. And, you know, it just, I like when wrestling can take you out of the arena.
Yes.
Right? And it can add to characters. It can add to stories.
You know what? Bold statement, but I'd say most of the best backstage video segments have been stuff where they took somebody and, like, you know, the sweeping the blood off the porch, the swerve going through different parts of, you know, his history and stuff like that. Like Bryan Danielson doing like yoga in his backyard. You know what I mean? Like
all the Adam Cole and MJF stuff when they're going to fucking Outback and shit like that.
Absolutely.
It all works.
Absolutely. It,
you don't have to be confined to a corporate backstage area. You can do your promos in the ring. You can do different areas around the arena.
Mm-hmm.
I saw on the Raw on Netflix, they've been shooting some promos where they kind of bring a guy into the crowd and you kind of, it gets like a weird, like this sports vibe of, I was like, that's pretty genius. That works. And it's just like, you can do it anywhere. You can get this MVP segment. And it was him and Shelton were there. I don't remember if Bobby was there. It accomplished so much more than if you just had Renee back there holding the mic to him. I don't know. I thought it was brilliant.
100%.
Little things like that.
I think MVP might have realized that after the first couple of in-ring or backstage, like sort of like, you know, don't know, whatever you're calling.
You can do backstage promos, but they just once you have four of them in the same night, it gets repetitive.
Well, what I mean is, like, I think he might have, as I'm saying, I think he might have realized that. He might have looked at the breadth of the show and said, oh, okay, we kind of don't really fit. We fit into a sea of these things. We got to have something unique. You know what I mean? So people stand out.
Which then we get the next thing.
Yeah. So we had a New York Minute with Chris Jericho, who called Cincinnati the Bluegrass State. The Learning Tree talked about an upcoming 12-man tag on Collision, which Brian Keith reminded us is a dozen motherfuckers. Brian Keith is in hell right now. Jericho called Copa Dope again, and Cash Wheeler a kneeler. Hey, yo. Anyway, kneeling before the throne, I guess. Jesus. I guess he is the king of New York, so. Jericho promised John Moxley that the Learning Tree and the Death Riders are going to be on the same page. Oh my god, I gotta acknowledge this. The fucking Wrestling Observer said here, this wasn't the best New York Minute segment they've done. Even Taz said that it was so rough it made him sad to be a New Yorker.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
This one was really bad.
That's a bad one, yeah.
There's some weeks where I don't mind it.
Right? Yeah, no, sometimes it's just there.
The cringe works. Because that's the gimmick. It's cringe, right? It's going to really hit hard. Some
Jericho's smiling at you like a maniac the whole time. Because he knows what he's doing, you know?
But, yeah.
Jericho and Smile 3 confirmed? Shit.
I think so.
But, yeah, so. Damn, we did have like a bit of a sea of promos here, didn't we? Goddamn. All right, Ricochet was addressing the attack on Swerve Strickland. Dude, this fucking segment was lit. He didn't get a word in for a while because they were so pissed at this guy, Charlie. This Ricochet heel turn could not have gone fucking better. This is working on every fucking level. I love this. He's got the gold scissors in his breast pocket, which just looked metal. The crowd's not even letting him talk. They're drowning him out with Swerve's house chants. Ricochet said the picture's worth 1,000 words and showed his bloody attack on Swerve Strickland on the big screen. Then you hear Swerve Strickland's music hit. Prince Nana sneaking in with the chair, cracking him on the back. Dancing over him, Swerve Strickland slow walking down to the ring like he's a fucking Winter Soldier and we're winning by fucking 20 points, you know? Like, you know how it is.
Again!
So they walked out with a chain, went to whip Ricochet. He ran for higher ground. Strickland was stalking him. And then Ricochet chucks security guard into him, bails out. Goes out into the snow. Bailed in the arena. Said, I'm out, bro. I don't even give a shit about my paycheck tonight. Said, I'm out of here. All right. Great stuff. You have any thoughts on that, bro? I love that fucking segment.
Ricochet is a brilliant,
grandiose heel, and it's exactly what he deserves to be. Yes.
This feels powerful. This has energy. It's unlocking that level of charisma that we knew Ricochet had.
Bro, I think he was just so shocked that he got this level of reaction. Can you imagine how fucking cathartic that has to be for that guy after he was told for his whole career, basically, that he couldn't do that exact thing that he did? You know what I mean? Like, dude, shut the fuck up if you think Ricochet can't do this stuff. This was the guy you were making lose to everybody? Are you fucking kidding me?
This is Mr. Two-time, man. Two-time Bola champ.
How many other people have ever done that, if anybody?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, and I don't think anyone has. And if they have, it's fucking a long time ago. Mr. Two-Time.
Unbelievable stuff here. I just cannot believe the levels is hitting. When they have their match, and I believe it's, 2 weeks? And by the way, the fact that it's a couple weeks out, fucking brilliant call by Tony Khan. I love when they do that.
So one step further. This is February 5th.
Yeah.
They haven't even started selling tickets to that arena yet as of the show.
They're already hyping it up. This is fucking how you sell out arenas, dude. That's what I'm telling
you. This is a whole, AEW probably should start selling tickets, 2 or 3 months in advance and stuff. But if you're going to do a scenario where, oh, hey, we're doing our show in Atlanta. Guess what? Tickets come on sale Friday. So you better hurry up. Better hurry up.
Yeah.
And I looked and already like 1,300 or 1,500 tickets had sold. I saw on Blue Sky. So
there you go.
I mean... People are eating it up. They're excited. So,
100%.
It looks like it's at a kind of arena like we had this week. Which let's touch on that. What'd you think of the Brady Center?
I honestly, I'll say the one thing that I've been noticing about the arenas lately is that they are smaller, which was obviously the plan for this year.
This had vibes of the ballroom to me.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, definitely noticed that. I liked the vibe. I am noticing the smaller size, though, but I will say that it does look a lot nicer when there's not, like, just empty spots in the crowd. You know what I mean? Like, not that there were ever big chunks, but you would see, like, the few seats in the back rows of a section that was on screen that would just be empty. You know what I mean? Like, you know, whereas when you watch a WWE show, every seat in that arena is filled pretty much. So, you know, like,
let them shoot the whole thing. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, I don't even want to know what the back end of the, I don't even want to know what looks like behind the hard cam. I'm a little concerned these days. You know what I mean? But who knows? Either way, but usually when they,
I like taking advantage of these kinds of arenas though.
100%. And I think I liked the look of the set in this one for sure. I think that sometimes the arenas they're in can kind of hamstring the way the set looks a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, and this was an example where I think they kind of just worked with it. You know what I mean? So yep,
they created the classic, the ramp to the ring.
Yep. So,
which I love.
Good stuff. Yep. 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 All right. So we had the Hurt Syndicate, which was Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, and MVP defeating Mark Briscoe and the AEW Tag Team Champions Private Party, Quinn and Zay. This is like 90-10 Hurt Syndicate here.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, sure, we all probably expected. Yeah, so I guess it's been like, I guess MVP had a few indie matches at the end of last year, but prior to that, it had been like 2 years since he'd competed on TV. So, you know, and apparently this was the first match Private Party have had since winning the titles on Dynamite, which doesn't sound right, but apparently is, you know, so there you go.
Yeah, because they've been doing a lot of like segments where they're at the stage and they didn't even... They haven't been wrestling on television that much, which is probably a pretty decent thing for your champions, but it gets a little different in AEW when you're a champion. So, but you know,
ultimately I'm still
enjoying the title reign. I've got no complaints.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, they haven't really been used to hold on in terms of, actually defending the titles, but I assume that like there'll be a time in the year when the other champions are going to want to rest and they start leaning.
We've been waiting for a proper like feud, and I think we're getting it here.
Yes, this will be it. It sucks that it could actually lose them here. The thing that they could end up losing them and then winning them back. That could be an angle they run with this. We don't do that a ton in AEW, so you know, and the few times that we have, I think it has worked. So, but I do think that everybody looked fine here. Mark Briscoe a little bit in limbo. He kind of had a little bit of momentum coming out of the Classic, and it's already starting to, you know, fade a little bit. So hopefully we get something for him. It'll probably more than likely end up being on Ring of Honor, unfortunately. But, you know, maybe he can get lucky. So Zay hit this hot tag at one time in the match where he kind of like ran wild for a second. And then Quinn tagged in, and there was like drop kicks all over the place. Held the ropes open, and... Briscoe hit like a somersault dive. MVP and Benjamin were like flat on their backs on the outside. And MVP and Zay, well, sorry, this fucking article was written weirdly. I'm just fucking losing my shit. Basically, they won. All right. It was fucking 90-10 them. You know exactly what happened there. I'm sorry. I'm tweaking a little bit here.
It was similar to the Hangman match in terms of, Private Party got their asses kicked.
Basically, yeah. I mean, which I was a little surprised by, to be completely honest with you, because they are the champions. But, I mean, I guess you want to get your bad guys over. That's how you do it, right?
Yep.
We get told that Cope vs. Pac will happen next week. We get a quick video package of the friendship between Cope and FTR. I thought that was really good stuff, you know, seeing them, you know, be boys, you know. And this is where we got the Swerve versus, Ricochet 3 weeks out announcement. We already talked about Jeff Jarrett and MJF, which took up a long time on the show. Then we had a match that I just could care less about, Charlie and Hook defeating Christian Cage via DQ. So Shibata shows up to even the odds at one point. And I'll tell you that by the end of it, I did care, but like going into this, I cared so little, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Well,
like they pointed out, I mean, this feud started multiple months ago and it feels like Taz is already bad.
Taz's injury that, like, his IRL fucking, not injury, but his IRL surgery that he had to have that they covered for with a storyline just for fun. You know what I mean? Like, that they used into a storyline, you know, because Taz was going to be off TV. They worked it in. And then they never paid it off within a time frame that felt like it mattered. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just, yeah. Hook ran out during the entrance and attacked and stared down Mother Wayne. He tried to bail up out of the ramp at one point, did Christian Cage, but he was brought back down. You know, I loved that he backdropped him into the ring. That was pretty funny, you know?
Yeah.
Cage then backed off, tried to apologize, hugged Hook, who then turned it into an overhead suplex like that spot. Cage then took a hard corner buckle before being comforted by Mother Wayne into a commercial break. It's a funny way to go into a commercial. During the break, Kip and Nick Wayne came out. I didn't realize that was during the break. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
That's insane. Sorry. Do you have your fucking spot of people coming out while they're away in commercial? AEW needs to get shit together sometimes with shit like that. I'm sorry. That's unexcusable. What are we doing? I get it was for the crowd, but like what? Ugh, whatever. Then that's also when Shibata came out to back Hook. Cage was sent over the top of the outside. And then Hook hit like a diving forearm off the apron, which looked pretty nice. He tried to hit the revenge spot, stomping the hand on the ring steps. But Cage shoved his legs out. And that fucking spot where his spine smacked onto the fucking edge of the steps, bro, that shit probably hurt. You know what I mean? there was 3 sprawl flashes in a row that hit for 2. And Cage went for a spear. Hook avoided it. He struggled to recover. Cage ultimately did hit a spear, but he kicked out of it. And he battled back with some clotheslines from, some random throws, a fisherman suplex. All those things got 2. Then he locked in the red room, and it got broken by the ropes. So, Hook was then just like trying to do everything he could to beat him up at this point. He was hitting his cross faces. He slid through, but then he got a red rum locked in on him again. Shibata then held off Wayne and Sabian, but it was enough to distract Hook enough that Cage laid him out with a reverse DDT. And I should say that he then hit Shibata with it. And then he wanted a kill switch. Hook countered with another red rum, and then Sabian and Wayne came in and pounced on the ring for the DQ. So, it's a bit overbooked in the match itself, but I think it worked. And then the Patriarch is setting up a Pilmanizer on the arm when Taz jumps up and is about to leave commentary. But then the music of Samoa Joe, Charlie.
Yeah.
And that was a huge pop. We haven't seen him in so goddamn long. And Sabian Wayne got beat up. And then Shibata, Joe, and Cage stood tall. So I'm wondering if that's still a trio that we might potentially try. Certainly it feels like it's going to be Hook's boys. You know what I mean? So... so that was really good stuff. I really enjoyed this. Charlie, do you have any thoughts on this? I didn't give a fuck about the match going into it, but Samoa Joe's return will get me to care about something real quick.
Let's get that. Let's get that group going. What were they calling? Suzuki Joe with Joe, Shibata, and Hook. I mean, that group has sauce. Maybe they can get our trios belts away from the fucking hostage that they're being held right now. The match is pretty solid. Shenanigans are afoot, and it worked for what it was. I love Samoa Joe being back. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it.
100%. All right. Ring, ring. All right, yeah, so... moving into my actual notes now. We had a follow-up video package for the Casino Gauntlet match. This featured various people. I had Jay White saying he's going to get hands on Wheeler Yuta. Undisputed Kingdom say they want to get some gold in 25, and Daniel Garcia is telling them, bring it on, boy. We can do this. We can do this for the match, And then we cut to commercial, I believe, and then come back, and Renee Paquette's backstage with Jeff Jarrett. Then Dustin Rhodes walks up and says, he doesn't understand why MJF is so disrespectful. He doesn't know shit about what they've done in their careers. And he puts his support behind him and said, MJF got no clue what they've been through. And he also hyped up Jarrett and said he's a 12-time world champion and the Outlaws never die. They're the last two of their kind in this business. And they really kind of are in a lot of ways, Okay. This next match is going to fuck. We have so little time left before I got to get out of here and I got to fucking go through this actually pretty crazy match, All right. Casino Women's Gauntlet. Thankfully, it wasn't as long as the last one. So there's that. Which actually might not even be true. But obviously we have Chris Statlander entering at number 1 because she won the match last week. And at number 2, Charlie, we get Jamie Hayter.
Yeah.
At number 2. And when they locked up, I was like, oh, this is gonna be a fun match because their lockup just looks so goddamn solid, And Chris is just phenomenal. Something I thought was interesting that during this point when they were still building up the first two in the ring, they said that specifically because of the stipulation that she did with Mariah May, Anna Jay was not allowed to be in this match.
Yeah, I love that. I think it was Mariah that said it.
It might have been, actually. Yeah, you're probably right, because Mariah was on commentary for this, which I did forget to mention. But yeah, and so there you go. And that was pretty solid. So, you know, I like mentioning that. It makes complete sense. That may not even been something that they intentionally did. Like, they may have, like, not included her because of that, but, like, that would have been something that they thought super hard about. It was just something they had to stick to. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there's a list of all the gimmick stipulations that they've done like that on a list somewhere so that no one forgets. You know what I mean? At least I hope for God that there's someone like that, because not – it's a lot of stories in a year. You could forget. You know what I mean? So – but yeah, so, and then at number three, Charlie, we got somebody who we've been actually honestly talking about for like 2 years on this podcast, potentially showing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I think this is one that even when we first started, you said might even be a possibility of showing back up. You know what I mean? So, Megan Bain debuted or returned or whatever you want to call it at number three, you know what I mean? So, and she's been in Stardom for quite some time now. And I thought she was a really fun addition to this match. I wonder if this means we're going to get a Megan Bain run or if this is just a one-off for this match. Either way.
That's what Mariah kept asking, too.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder what this is going to be, because she'd be a great opponent for Mariah, obviously. So, you know, because they've got history there. You know, she even said that she came into the company as I was leaving. You know what I mean? So, which was not, which she implied was not unintentional. You know what I mean? Like, so that could be fun. We had Julia Hart at four, who was at one point deposited at the feet of the champ. Willow came in at five. And we had a little tag team spot for Willow and Chris, which I thought was good. We had Toni Storm enter at six. What I thought was interesting about this match, Charlie, was it felt like it was like unlike the other one, where it felt like, okay, we're going to have whoever it is, one person and the next person, they're going to wrestle and they're going to do some spots for a few minutes. This felt like a lot more intense in a lot of ways, because like there would be, you know, like I'll give you an example. Megan Bain hits a leaping clothesline that takes out Chris Statlander and then a Falcon Arrow for two, right? But that's like, and Jamie's breaking up that pin and then Hayter's firing off on her. Bane's no selling it, tries a suplex, Hayter reverses it into a DDT, you know what I mean? And that's when the Julia Hart entrance hits, you know what I mean? So it's like all while this is all going on, it's constant action the entire time, you know what I mean? Whereas it felt like there were lulls in the men's match at some points. It felt like, because people were, you know, hitting big moves and then they would lay out. It's not like they were not selling for each other, but it almost just felt like everybody was constantly like they were hitting that adrenaline. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Interesting note here, Charlie. Julia Hart came out through the babyface tunnel.
Pretty cool.
I didn't notice that. Interesting. I wonder if that's an indication of something.
I mean, look, I think people want to root for Buddy, Brody, and Julia. So
I think so as well.
And when Sky Blue returns, she'll be a babyface. So.
Oh, 100%. So, you know, that's good stuff. Yeah, so we obviously have Willow at five, like I said, and Bane waited for her. The two started throwing shots. We got some female meat slappage here, you know. Statlander got involved. She's like, "Hey, I got meat too." What?
Bane is huge.
Oh yeah, that's the thing that I thought was, that I noticed about her right away, was her. She's got an imposing figure, which not a lot of women in the women's divisions do. And this could be why she didn't get brought in when Jade was here, because she maybe would have filled a similar role to Jade in that. You know what I mean? Like. So maybe we can use her in that role now, because we haven't really had somebody like that.
Megan Bain is listed as 6'1".
That's tall. So that's, you could use that to your advantage. Yeah. So, oh wow. So she, you know, yeah, she's attacking both Sat and Willow, who end up hitting like that tag team suplex, and. But then they start chopping the hell out of each other, because, yeah, we might be friends, we might not be enemies anymore, but you know, we want that shot of the champ, bro. So, sorry, this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Toni Storm in at six. She's running wild with snapmares, shoulder blocks, which apparently has become her new thing. She then gets launched onto Statlander on the ramp by Megan Bain. But then... sorry, then it's just the way that phrases it, but then turn into a nightingale missile drop kick. That's such a great fucking way to refer to that, you know what I mean? Because it's what you did. I mean, it just sounds so silly when you write it on paper, you know what I mean? Yeah, Hart and Hayter are also taking some drop kicks to the jaw. Nightingale wiped out Megan Bain. She dies. Willow does a lot of really crazy stuff for someone that has like the strength and build of her, you know what I mean? Like, she's very bodybuilder built, you know what I mean? And she's obviously very strong because of that, but she can also like, I'm almost like in like a Willie Mack or a, I'm trying to think of another example, just a you know, someone who's got more meat on them in terms of like they've got a lot of muscle, you know what I mean? But they just, you'd think, oh, that person can't flip and flop around, but they can, you know what I mean? So love what see, and just the way it's right reads the notes, I just see the words Nightingale missile, and that just sounds like something that would like actually exist, you know what I mean? So Harley Cameron came in at 7. She's trying to, you know, scramble to get some pins. That's actually a smart strategy in a match like this, if you think about it. Everyone's already been getting hit by lots of moves, you know what I mean? Like, and so they're probably like not necessarily, you know, and you might think in this kind of match that you have the time to like, you know, fuck around, you know what I mean? And not necessarily have to be involved in everything, but that's ultimately not the case. There was a haterade attempted at one point by on Julia. But then she doesn't avoid the hate breaker. And Cameron nearly stole a pin on Jamie Hayter for 2. Then she then takes a hate breaker herself, ducks a haterade, only to be misted by Julia Hart. And then thrust kick delivered on Jamie. And then Hart went to end things on Harley when Storm slid in and got an inside cradle, pinned Julia Hart to win the match. So Toni Storm ultimately ends up winning. A rookie winning a match like this is obviously huge for her career, Charlie. And going into your home country to win a title potentially is obviously huge. I mean, assuming anybody gets to see it on that tape delay, you know, but whatever. Like,
I can't wait to see what Mariah says to her this week.
That should be really interesting. It'll be really fun because Mariah on commentary was playing into this, but I could also see evil Mariah deciding that she just wants to, you know, like fuck with things further. You know what I mean? And like actually like just call her out and try and, but it'd also be funny if she tried to do that and Tony just, it didn't compute for her at all. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know what you mean. I've literally never met you before in my life, you know, like, but yeah. So that being said, I guess that takes us to the main event, Charlie, and then that'll take us to Collision. And fuck, I used all the fucking time on this podcast this week, so good luck. But thankfully, the back half of that show has got a ton on it, so, you know. yeah, so Powerhouse Hobbs was unsuccessful in his attempt to win the AEW World Championship. And I liked this match, Charlie. But Moxley's starting to get formulaic, man. It's starting to feel like it's the same thing every time, you know, like... like, I don't know. Do you agree with me? That's kind of where I feel
gotta
like
tell
I'm
you,
not.
I think sometimes I think the Death Riders, he's taken some notes that he saw with Roman and the Bloodline. I mean, the shenanigans are every fucking match, yeah. Every fucking match. I don't know.
I will say everything pretty much was good for Hobbs in this match.
Yeah. He was booked strong.
Ooh, interesting note here. When they mentioned the members of Team Taz, they didn't mention Ricky. Interesting. Okay. That's not really that much of a note because he's not remotely involved in this, but I guess whatever. You know, neither were the other people they mentioned. So, yeah, I mean, this was good stuff. I mean, Hobbs was biting ears. You know, he had blood in his mouth. Moxley was bleeding a little bit. They did a lot of really good stuff. There's hard hitting stuff from Hobbs, and like I liked what Hobbs was doing. Hobbs looked strong, but like I just knew going into this, there's no fucking chance in hell Hobbs is winning this. You know, like as much as I wanted it to be not the case, right? It just wasn't gonna happen. You know, yeah. I don't know. I actually kind of want to toss it to you before I get to the post-match here, because I actually don't even know what to say about this match. It really disappointed me. I was really riding on this show, and then I really was hoping Hobbs was somehow going to fucking do this, you know? Like, I knew it wasn't happening, but I was like, I kind of needed that at the end of this show. I don't know. Where are you at with that?
I mean, Hobbs looked like he belonged in the world title scene, if we're trying to find a common ground here to be happy about. I don't think they're going to forget about him in the world title scene. I think Hobbs is someone that can hold the world championship for a few months. I think he is worthy of being that good.
So it's the wrong time with him, right? And I don't know how this is not the... If this isn't the right time, Charlie, when's going to be the right time? Because we're in shambles right
now. This match was gruesome. We had to splash a color in the match with the blood that we like. I don't know when the time is. I think maybe for him, it's regrouping now. Maybe, you know, seeing what's happening elsewhere. I don't know. He's still involved with the Death Riders, right? So I don't know, man. It's really weird. It sucks that this is where Mox is at, but you know, there wasn't like an over sense of chemistry between the two of them. It felt like a real fight, which I think we do like. So, yeah, I mean, it had good, but I sometimes think he took the wrong notes from the Bloodline, man, because even the people that really, really went to bat for that would agree. At a certain point, every Roman match hit the same fucking formulaic thing, and everybody, you have Wheeler making the runs, and Marina making the runs, and Claudio making the runs. It's like, all right.
Let's talk about that. You're into the post-match. I mean, the Death Riders hit the ring as a group, and Hobbs is briefly fighting them off. Castagnoli used a chair on the previous injured leg, tore off the brace, and then turned smacking the chair with the leg, or leg with the chair. It pilmanized his leg. Obviously, this is when FTR and everyone makes the save to chase him off. But, like, you know, like, I don't know. It's just like...
Doesn't push that needle anymore forward, man.
No. So this did it for me last year, but I feel like we needed to end it at the end of last year, and we just didn't. You know what I mean? So, I don't know.
I think the big story with Orange Cassidy should have been the one to put the title on someone else. And because that story was brilliant, it really was. But they did it first, so you're not just going to take the belt away from Mox in a month.
No, you're not, and that's why that was such a bad choice. But hey,
we talk about blowing their load a little early. They definitely did with this. But hey, I think Cope versus Mox could have a lot of heat behind it.
I think that's the reason why Hobbs doesn't win it here, right? Because they want it to be on Cope now. You know what I mean? So, I mean...
Maybe.
I don't know. They want at least Cope to be the most threatening challenger at the very least. You know what I mean?
I think the most threatening challenger would be Hangman right now. I don't know how you get
there.
The
problem is I don't know how Hangman gets there. That's
I don't know either.
You know, like, so... Yeah, he'd probably have to beat Christian Cage for his title shot, and I don't think they're doing that. So, you know, like...
Yeah. So let's take a dip into Collision here. We 100%. Talked about the opening. They brought back the thing again with... the opening monologue and from Braided FTR, Runners, Hobbs, Okada, and Hangman Page were there. We have Toni Storm get her town hall. Pretty much she's getting asked about Mariah May and says she wants to introduce herself, and she will next week on the homecoming episode of Collision. It's Toni time, yada yada. Pretty good.
Toni squared.
It was nice to see a in-ring promo for Toni, because I think this character is working on a lot of levels. We get a recap of Wednesday's trios match. Undisputed Kingdom take on a defeat Shane Taylor Promotions, Lee, Carly Bravo, and Sean Dean. Solid Trios. Kingdom has officially moved away from MJF. And I thought this was a fun Trios match. I think both teams would be a welcome addition to a Trios division if we still had one, it feels like.
I was gonna say, do we think that's going to be maybe our next Trios champions will be possibly the Undisputed Kingdom, maybe?
I'd be down. We just need to get these belts the fuck away from the current trio holding them.
They got to figure out what their gimmick is, though. The way they're all just three standing there doing their little individual stances, it's fine, yeah. But
it worked with the era, so they're going to try and do it here, too.
I know, but maybe they just try something new. I don't know. It's just, mm-hmm. You know, maybe just be some boys. I don't know. They could do their individual entrances.
TNT champion Daniel Garcia came out to take the fight to Sean Taylor, or no?
Shane Taylor.
I'm like, no, I wrote Sean. Pretty good. Pretty good stuff.
Good stuff. I wish Shane Taylor's...
Kingdom stared him down.
Yeah. Do you think we get a program with those two groups maybe, potentially? I mean...
I'm fine with it. Yeah.
Be a good starter program, but maybe that's how they get their names in the Trios Championship hats, is by they beat them in like some sort of extended feud. I mean, have we ever had a non-title extended Trios feud that I can't remember?
It doesn't involve the House of Black? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, probably not. Yeah.
So, recaps from Wednesday. A lot of that this week. Murder Machines came out and dog walked Top Flight. Woof.
Yeah, Top Flight and Shane Taylor Promotions kind of got jobbed out a little bit this week.
Yeah, buddy. Hey, I'll tell you what. I mean, Cage and Archer looked like a couple of fucking Murder Machines. So Andretti and Leo came out after. They talked some trash, and they laid him out, too. So Learning Tree was backstage with Lexi. Brutal segment. Daniel Garcia and Matt Menard were then backstage with Lexi. Undisputed Kingdom interrupt them. Cole thanked Garcia again for the help before lamenting that Menard and Garcia didn't have a third man to challenge for the Trios match. That Angelo Parker will be there next week. Cool, cool, cool.
It's a good return. I wonder if Ruby will be with him or not.
The end of the Acclaimed. Okay. Max Caster came
out. This should have been done 3 months ago.
With the Louis Vuitton bag. He's getting booed. Anthony Bowens is out there. He hits the ring. Best wrestler alive. He cuts him off. He's protected him. He's been his partner, his best friend. But he's a liar, arrogant edgelord piece of shit.
Oof. I tell you, this could have been your favorite this week, and both of us would have picked promos, and it would not have been that big of a deal. Anthony went the fuck off here.
I think Anthony's going to be really, really good as a singles competitor. He has every tool needed to be a world champion. He's more motivated than ever. He was an ambassador for AEW, the pride of AEW, wrestling's five-tool player. He didn't need a piece of paper to prove it. Billy Gunn came out to try and calm things down. Cassius said that Gunn didn't care about them and only attached himself to the Acclaim to get attention. Gunn made the team about himself when it should have been about him, the best wrestler alive. Oh, and Bowens, too. Gunn got in Caster's face. Caster told Bowens that if he wanted to keep the team together, he'd pick him over Gunn. So Bowens threw up the scissors. Caster went to scissor him. Bowens gave him the middle finger. He throws a tantrum. Bowens telling Bowens that the Acclaim was done because he said they were done. He'd prove he's the best wrestler alive. Bowens and Gunn would suck without them. And then Bowens and Gunn scissored one last time to end the night. I still think Billy Gunn would be a perfectly fine manager for Anthony Bowens if they want to go that route. You know, kind of how Lance Archer has Jake the Snake, right?
Yeah, he's just there to, like, maybe in one segment.
Well, I guess he had Jake the Snake. He's now with LFI.
That's true.
Where's that been? Jesus.
Oh, yeah, LFI are dead. Let's be honest. Whoa. How long has it been since you thought the name Roosh in your head?
Oh, shit. You know what? Roosh was on Raw. That must be the answer.
Yeah, Roosh was on Raw this week.
Hold on. That might come off as stupid because Penta just debuted. Anyways, it's playing off an Adam Cole joke. Never mind.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know, we made the joke that Adam Cole was on Raw because he wasn't on the show.
Someone might not have watched last week. Like, dumbass, that was not Roosh.
Yeah, no.
Penta. Swerve was at a golf event. Fuck, what was that Mercedes segment? Did we talk about that?
The Mercedes segment?
They had highlight. This reminded me of this. There was a highlight package with Mercedes.
Oh, thankfully, I actually do remember this, I think.
Okay. Yeah, it was really good highlight package that showed everything she's done in the past. And it just felt like a total star. And they kind of did that with Swerve here. I thought it was really good touch.
Yes. That was, yes. Yeah, no, that was.
I'm going to kind of breeze through this.
Someone grabbed my phone and used it for a phone call. So hopefully my phone's not dead when I go to work later. That would suck.
Yeah, true. Okada defeated Tomohiro Ishii. Pretty solid match. You know, pretty good stuff. Gates of Agony are backstage. AEW sends them to Daily's place. They're going to take on Brody King and Buddy Matthews. Dustin Rhodes defeated
Adam Priest.
Sucks
that we're getting Gates of Agony for the first time since they've not been attached to fucking, you know, that whole situation where they're going to be jobbed out, essentially. That sucks.
Julia Hart took on and defeated Harley Cameron. Pretty good match. Again, Harley Cameron takes advantage of every single fucking opportunity. I love Harley Cameron. I love Julia Hart. And she's going to be taking on Jamie Hayter in a rematch on Dynamite next week. Blah, 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 blah. And then we get the main event. Big 12-man tag had all the drama in the world on Blue Sky, surprisingly. So I'm sure God only knows what it was like on Twitter. It was just whatever. It was whatever. It didn't kill pro wrestling. It didn't bury Mox that he teamed with fucking with Jericho. It was just a fun fireworks match. It was just a good time.
Does seem a little silly, I will say, given the feud that the two of those had that he teamed with them.
But of course it was just a fun match because this is AEW and they know how to go out there. If they're going to do a fucking 12-man tag, you're going to enjoy it. At the very minimum, you're going to see some stupid shit happen and you're going to have a good time. So, and I had a good time. So it was what it was. I haven't even checked what this was listed on Cage Match. Maybe since Jericho's in, it's probably got a 2.6. It was fine, man. It was perfectly fine. Again, the show was built around the Texas Death Match, and that delivered. Next week's Dynamite, we got a big one. Osprey and Kenny face-to-face, Cope versus Pac, AEW Tag Team Titles, Private Party versus the Hurt Syndicate, Samoa Joe versus Nick Wayne, Julia Hart versus Jamie Hayter. And yeah, other than that, just some fun little shenanigans going afoot. So thank you, everyone, for checking out this week's show. We'll be back next week talking some more AEW. Again, if you're interested at all in Oscars or God knows anything else about movies and television and books and God knows what else, ESE Fantasy, if you just type it in. If you type in Eat Sleep Elite Fantasy, it'll also work out. Thursday, we're doing a show where we talk about the Oscar nominations, and I can't fucking wait. That's going to be a blast. Thanks, everyone, for checking out today's show. Hit the like button. Like, appreciate it. If you're new here, hit the follow button. If you want to give us a rating on Spotify or whatever, we'd appreciate that too. I noticed our ratings have been ticking up, so I guess people have been doing that. It's really cool. We had some good ratings, so
share the show with your friends if you think you're into pro wrestling or into the other stuff. Yeah. If you're into the other shows as well, or if you think maybe they'd be interested in the other show, just show it to them. They may not like it, but they may at least be maybe they do, and maybe they have something new. I tell you, one of the things I struggle with, especially as someone who games all the time, is finding content to put on in the background. Yeah. And podcasts are phenomenal for that. So even if your friend doesn't like podcasts, just give it a recommendation.
I feel like we like to structure our show as it's a weekly AEW show that you can tune into knowing you're going to get people just talking about what happened and not be over dramatic, overbearing, you know, God, this is the worst thing I've ever seen, or God, this was the greatest thing I've ever seen. I mean, sometimes it is, because, you know, when you're horny, you're horny. But that being said, thank you very much.
Again!
We'll see you guys next week for Eat Sleep Elite.
Tom Frenchie screams Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.